In the late 1950s, everyone was looking for the new bird. Some thought it was Sonny Rollins, others thought it was Coltrane. But in 1958, word of a new jazz messiah from Dallas and Fort Worth, Texas, began to circulate. A strange, intense man who played a plastic horn, but his playing would split the jazz world even more than Charlie Parker's had. In some ways, Ornette Coleman was the most controversial musician in jazz perhaps ever. The jazz critics adored him, and lots of musicians were profoundly changed by his playing, including Sonny Rollins, Coltrane, Eric Dolphy, Roland Kirk. John Lewis of the Modern Jazz Quartet said, "Coleman is doing the only really new thing in jazz since the innovation of Parker, Gillespie, and Monk." You may remember Shelly Mann, who was a West Coast cool drummer that we saw briefly during the Cool Era. Not somebody we'd expect to like this new thing, but he did. He said, quote, "Ornette sounds like a person crying or a person laughing when he plays. He makes me want to laugh and cry. The real traditional players will do those things to you. Although he may be flying all over the horn and doing weird things metrically, the basic feelings are still there. He makes you listen so hard. Somehow," he said, "I became more of a person in my own playing. He made me feel freer." End quote. That's Shelly Mann. But lots of other musicians rejected this new thing as just being utter rubbish. Roy Eldridge said, quote, "I listened to Coleman high. I listened to him cold sober. I even played with him. I think he's jiving, baby. He's putting everybody on." End quote. Monk said, "There's nothing beautiful in his playing." Benny Carter said, "From the very first note, he's miserably out of tune." Miles Davis said, "Hell, just listen to what he writes and how he plays. If you're talking psychologically, this man is screwed up inside." So by the time Miles had made Kind of Blue, Ornette was already pretty well known for soloing without preconceived harmony, using only the internal logic of his melodic inventions as a guide to what he would play. He would name this harmelodics, and it means that the harmony is supposed to follow the melody. It's probably a little confusing, because it is. I mean, as Coleman said to his bass player, Charlie Hayden, "You decide what to play after I play." Well, wait, you've already played it. How do I do that? Most people didn't understand and still don't understand what harmelodics is, but this was this new organizing principle that Ornette would talk about. He began in the late 50s, first experimenting with odd length sections. You know, he had pieces that were 14 bars and then 8 bars, or lots of 7 bar phrases, or 10 plus 10 plus 6. He tried to break down the barriers that determined that sections had to be 8 bars. If you remember when we listened to Miles Davis' Kind of Blue, Miles was trying to do some of the same things with the modal style, but that people kept playing, Miles included, playing 4 beats or 4 bars and then 4 bars and kept playing in these equaled measure phrases. So Ornette starts trying to play in odd lengths of phrases. This is a piece called Congeniality. It's a good example of this. It's in 3 sections. There's this slow section, which lasts for 4 bars. And that fast section. Then there's this A section. There's actually a 3 bar phrase, and the middle section's that slow. Then the final section. And back to the A, which is a very strange 3 bar little A. Then what's effectively the bridge, the slow bit. And then a concluding section. So 3 very different kinds of sections. Then Ornette starts to play. You'll notice there's no piano. Think why there might be no piano in this group. Thank you. So imagine being the bass player, Charlie Hayden, thrown into this new kind of group where there's no music, there's no harmony, there's no chord changes, there's no structure, or it just says, I'm going to play, make up harmony that goes with what I play. Well, if you listen to it, it sounds fairly free. It took scholars a long time listening to this recording over and over and over again to realize that Charlie Hayden starts playing a bass line, actually from the very beginning, that mirrors the three sections at the beginning that have odd lengths of sections sometimes, but that kind of match the harmony he was given initially. That's probably a very hard thing to hear. For most of it just sounds like there's a bass line. And since there's no piano, the soloist is more free to play all over the place and to play melody that just comes out of melody. But that's what Miles Davis was doing. This sounds pretty different. So one of the things you may hear in this music is that Ornette often grunts and wails, a bit like that Texas tenor sound that we talked about. Well, in this case, Coleman actually played in rhythm and blues bands in Texas, and so he learned some of that grunting and honking and shouting and some of those wails. And that now appears here in a new context. Remember when we talked about Coltrane and all of his practicing? Well, Coltrane could practice by himself. He could go into the bathroom or sit on the edge of the bed and just practice and practice and practice. But in order for Ornette to practice, he needed a group because his music is made more collaboratively. So he puts together this group with Don Cherry, Billy Higgins, and Charlie Hayden. And that's the group you've been listening to. But then Ornette decides that one quartet isn't enough. He wants two. Oh, and he wants them to play together at the same time, but without music. So maybe your expectations were low, but you were probably expecting more noise, more cacophony. And what you may notice is that, in fact, this was pretty organized. Only one person is soloing now, Ornette, and that the band, when they played, they actually played for a while. They played everybody playing at once a little bit, and then they all kind of played a line. So that while this is from the landmark album Free Jazz from 1959. It has two quartets and they play at once. It does in fact have some structure. Most of the people are allotted a solo space, and there are things that happen in between, bits of everybody play at once kind of free jazz, like this. Now, the sound world here is a little different, but this is really just a riff behind the soloist. Of course, having multiple soloists at the same time is a problem we've had since New Orleans, so we're kind of used to this. But what's really unusual about this is that there are two rhythm sections, two bass players, two drummers. So in addition to Ornette's regular group, he has a second quartet of Freddie Hubbard, Eric Dolphy, Scott LaFaro, Billy Higgins. Now, those names might not all mean something to you, but that really is the all-star team. To have those eight guys together on one album. So Ornette organizes the rhythm section the following way. On the right channel, he puts his regular rhythm section, Charlie Hayden and Ed Blackwell, and says, your job is to keep the beat, keep time. Then in the left channel, he sets up the other rhythm section with Scott LaFaro and Billy Higgins and says, your job is to challenge the time. As you're listening, you can also hear Don Cherry and Coleman on the left channel. So actually, not with his regular rhythm section. And he's got Eric Dolphy and Freddie Hubbard on the right channel. So the album's actually recorded in stereo with one quartet in each channel. Thank you. Now, as free as this music is, notice that the term free jazz doesn't really mean totally free. The music doesn't have as strict a meter, but it still has a pulse, and it still has a form. So the music might be free from traditional chord progressions, but it's not free of structure, melody, organization, or of values. The textures vary rapidly, often becoming very dense, but there are values in the different types of textures that he creates. He doesn't use a piano because it would tie him down harmonically. But as you listen to the music, think about the things that do vary. Think about how the music actually is structured. There are actually two takes of free jazz. I recommend you listen to both of them. The second take is 36 minutes. That's the one that is initially issued. It's perhaps the classic take. Yes, that's a long time, but do what you have to do. Light some candles and listen to the whole thing. So, whatever you think, Ornette Coleman was enshrined as being the avant-garde in America. He was the first jazz artist ever to win a Guggenheim Fellowship on the Smithsonian Collection of Classic Jazz. He has three performances. As I said, the critics loved him. In 1962, he took a little bit of a break. He taught himself violin and trumpet. He then took a European tour in the mid-1960s. He wrote music for wind quintet. And then in 1972, he wrote a 21-movement suite for symphony called Skies of America and started using this word harmolodics more frequently, writing, quote, "The life of today needs music that fills the heart with love and joy and the mind with joy, whatever the style. It's a very sad affair when one must put any music above another to fulfill a social position for wealth or personal ego," end quote. Skies of America is based on a theory called harmolodics, which uses only the melody. Again, the idea of the harmony follows the melody. What he said that meant was, quote, "The voicing of the orchestra is written high, in very high parts, because I wanted the sound of the orchestra to create a very clear earth and sky image of sound. The movements are free of key and use the total collective blending of the transposed and non-transposed instruments using the same interval. If one needs to know whatever one must know about anything to bring them closer to it, the joy is in the existence of it and the freedom of arriving to the highest pleasure with it, not from it. Love, hate, and lies live in the nature of all. In some manner, America knows all three. All Americans know who, how, and why their existence came to be American, regardless of the condition. If only then one could be as true as the skies of America." This might sound like mumbo jumbo to you, frankly some of it does to me, but it's very politically and aesthetically charged mumbo jumbo. It insinuates the music into a number of American cultural assumptions. It's very political, and it was received this way. So there are lots of good questions you can ask about Ornette Coleman. Why does free jazz seem so political? Is it really political? Does understanding Ornette Coleman require a context? Or can we explain what is happening here musically? All good questions to ponder. We'll talk more about this in class.